Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let the lies, feline, with a death wish. Right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Who is this?
I believe this is a Donald Glover song.
Who's that?
Childish Gambino.
I've heard that. Is that a group?
No, it's a man, an artist.
Who, so wait, why did you say it's someone else if it's Childish Gambino?
Well, because he goes by Donald Glover.
That's his
real name.
Hold on. Why does he go by?
Because he's an actor slash.
So his stage name is Childish Gambino.
Yeah.
His real name
is
Donald Glover. Name
is Donald. And I thought you'd maybe know him as Donald Glover.
Don't. I know who Childish Gambino is. Okay. I've heard the name. I don't know any of his music, but that's it.
This is one of them.
Okay. This is not Del, by the way, everybody.
Del knows this song. He picked it.
Yeah. The intro. I like the song. It's catchy.
Yeah, it's a great song.
Yeah, no problem with the jam. Just no idea who the hell it is. This is Will Kunkel, though, filling in for Del, listening to Donald Glover, a.k.a. Childish Gambino. You can find me on YouTube, Kicking It With Kunkel's my show. Please go give me a subscribe, follow along. I talked about Derek Stingley Jr. I want to get to him very quickly, and then we're going to get to that fourth down conversion. Do you guys like the decision to go for it on fourth down? Or do you like the call that they made on fourth down? Or would you have done something completely different? The NFL's tight. That's all I got to say. We're going to get to that second. Here's Derek Stingley Jr. Here's his numbers in a four-game win streak that they're on right now. He has been targeted 10 targets. 10 times he's been targeted in four games. He's allowed 3 catches in those 4 games on those 10 targets. He's allowed 20 receiving yards in 4 games on 3 catches out of 10 targets. He's allowed 0 touchdowns. He has 1 interception. The opponent passer rating against him in those 4 games, 0.0. The opponent EPA against him, negative 8.4. Defensive player of the year conversation for sure, right? He ain't going to get it. It just doesn't work that way.
I think Myles Garrett's going to run away with this thing.
I get it, but
all
this,
pro.
This is
first
the one
team
thing.
All pro.
It's like the MVP is always a quarterback. The Heisman's always a quarterback. The best defensive player always has to have sacks and interceptions. God forbid they take away everything on an entire half of the field. Heavens forbid they do it in winning football. I mean, come on. I don't know that he should win it, but to think that he shouldn't be in the conversation, what Sting is doing right now is extremely, extremely impressive. Not impressive, the play call on fourth down from Nick Caley, the tush push. I don't have a problem with the tush push the times that they did it, and I don't have a problem with it on third down. I need to be convinced that going forward on fourth down is the right decision in general on a team that has not had success in short yardage situations. It's not a goal line situation necessarily, but conceptually it is in regards to it being a short yardage situation. The playbook can be hypothetically opened because you can still go deep. You're not dealing with the back end of the end zone, making it a smaller field. but you haven't been very good in these situations. My thought is, I don't hate them going for it on fourth down. I do hate the play call. You haven't had success getting pushed up the middle all season long. We saw that against the Broncos in real time. We've seen it multiple times. You just haven't. You've had more success than late recently than you have all year, but still not great. So I don't mind going for it. I don't like the play call. But I also need to be convinced that going for it was even right. Because if the decision to go for it is that the negative side is that, hey, we can trust our defense up four, okay. But can't you also trust your defense up seven, forcing the Colts offense to have to score a touchdown? And then if they do, the worst case scenario is you're going to overtime. Don't you want to put your players in that position more so than being put in a position that if they score a touchdown, you lose this game? Like, okay, let's go to overtime. That's the worst case scenario. Again, I don't hate going for it, but I don't think it's the right call. I think the right call, and I don't know what the analytics say, so some nerds can get after me. I don't think the analytics are always right because I don't think you know every team and every situation, what they've been good at, what they haven't been good at, and also what the play call is going to be. Going back-to-back tushy-pushy is not the right call for sure. Again, I don't hate going for it. I like being aggressive. But in that situation, I think the right call is kicking the field goal, going up by seven, and you can still trust your defense. You can still say, hey, the defense is on the field with a chance to win the game. And the safety net is overtime. Not there is no safety net. If they score a touchdown, game over, Colts win. I don't understand why you put that on the field. Why do you make that an opportunity? Why do you make losing an option? Just kick the field goal. What do you think, Mapes?
I agree. I was surprised that they went for it. I'm not sure if I was surprised or just disappointed that I was just back-to-back tush pushes.
I think disappointed.
Yeah,
no, that makes sense. I think Nick had a good game. I think Kaylee had a good game.
Yeah.
That call, the way they ended the first half, is just kind of, yeah, man.
They make it be a B, not an A. You know, it's that kind of thing where it's like,
it's spelling errors on a test. You know, you write an essay, you make a great argument, the five paragraphs are knocked out, you hit your 1,000 word count, but you misspell your own dumbass name at the top of the paper and the subject's name, and all of a sudden the teacher's got to dock you because you're an idiot, and it's stuff you can control.
Yeah, because going for it, in my mind, it's you go for it because you think you can A, get a touchdown and actually in the game, B, just run more clock. But the thing is, you're at the 17-yard line. So you can only really get one more first down and run, you know, that time off. So the
And by the way, hold on, pause, just to interrupt and to be rude. Who says that they even run the ball, unlike what they did against the Broncos? Who says they even approach that situation properly, unlike they did going into first half?
Very good point.
So, like, yeah, okay, but do we even know that that was the intent? Do we even know that they would have handled that well? Because they didn't handle that moment well, let alone the impending futuristic moment wasn't handled well.
Yes, and like you said, the difference between four and seven, to me, I mean, the Colts are going to go for a touchdown anyway. So the difference is just protecting yourself from that touchdown being scored. So
you protect yourself from a loss.
Yeah.
They have to get a touchdown. They're in four down territory no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So because why not give yourself the potential of overtime versus, now we got to go down and score and whatever the time would have been.
Yeah, because in a weird way, three versus seven is almost better. Of like,
because then you're not in four down territory.
Yeah, you stop them in the red zone, they kick a field goal, you're still alive. So four and seven to me is very little difference. And like you said, it is just opening the door that you lose when you don't pick up this fourth down. So yeah, I would have kicked it. I'm sure someone tweeted out whatever the AWS analytics of like go for it or not is.
But that doesn't take in situations.
Yeah. You know? And
it doesn't take in players and moments and play calling and things like
that. And I think the Texans are very – specific type of team where the big umbrella analytics is actually not that useful for them because they are such a like lopsided
team. They're a niche team. Yeah. They do certain things really, really, really well, like on defense. And then on offense, good luck getting a grasp at what they do well and when it's going to happen. They do certain things well. I just don't know what it is and when it's going to happen.
Exactly. And you know, just give them the ball, you know, first and 10 from the 16. Like, if you just take a picture of them, like, hey, Sean, do you think they're going to score a touchdown here?
No, not really.
Like,
hard no.
I think of it, or I think they have a smaller chance than I would give the average NFL team. Like, if you just say NFL team A.
Oh, yeah, they're the worst red zone team in the NFL.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that actually holds up today because their numbers were okay, 40%, I believe, this game. So they may have
shuffled around a little.
But they're in the bottom of the barrel. Like, they're the bottom three in the NFL in the red zone.
So, to me, I'm just like, take the field goal. Let your defense win this game for
you. That's your calling card. That's your identity is the defense.
And it's definitely not short yardage. Whatever the opposite of it. Like, beyond red zone.
And I don't. Fourth and one is not their strong suit. Going forward on fourth down. I am a pro fourth down goer-guyer on certain situations, even for the Texans. But this one's not it. I just think this is the situation that you kick the field goal, put it in your defense's hands, as you were doing when you went for it. If you didn't get it, you were putting it in your defense's hands. But you just give them the safety net. That's all.
Yeah.
Give them a better safety net.
Going from their last drive to their first drive, what did you think of the field goal, fourth and goal from the four to start the game? Essentially to start the game.
I think you take the points.
Yeah. I think with the Texans, and D'Amico does do this a lot, where you err on the side of being more conservative and more.
Sometimes. So. Okay.
Except for the
Titans game.
Offensive play.
So remember the Titans game.
Remember the Titans game.
Remember the Titans. They will not gain. Nothing at all. The field goal is missed by Matthew Wright. Dumb penalty by the Titans gives them second life. They have an opportunity to kick the field goal again on fourth down. They don't take it. They go for it on fourth down. They're sacked for 11 yards with Davis Mills, and they don't get any points. So.
That
to be
true.
Fair, again, situational driven. I think in the Titans game, you kick that field goal 100% of the time. You struggle in the red zone. You struggle to get in the red zone. Take the points. You're playing a bad offensive team in the Titans. You have an elite defense. The points mean the world to you in that game. You take the points in that situation every time. Now, in this game against the Colts, I like that they got the points. I will say that if they went for it, I wouldn't be as angry in this situation simply because you are playing the best offense in the NFL, that maybe you will need touchdowns to win, and that if you don't get it, 96 yards to go, still difficult to accomplish if you're the Colts with a Daniel Jones with a broken fibula, which, by the way, dude, can we put some respect on his name?
Holy crap.
And he didn't look bad.
He did not look bad at all. I mean, he just didn't move very much, which understandable.
Yeah.
Broken leg. But yeah, I was really impressed. I was super impressed.
Yeah, just to be fair, I don't think you broad brush every fourth down on the 4-yard line on the first drive.
Yeah.
You would think, okay, opening drive, 4-yard line. If you would kick it here, why wouldn't you kick it in this situation? Well, that's why. In the Titans game, you're going up against a very bad offense. You are not very good offensively. Just take the damn points.
Yeah, you can just sit on that.
Yeah, yeah. Against the Colts, you're on the road. I know you were on the road in Titans. Against the number one offense in the NFL, maybe you'll need the touchdowns because this is a game where you need touchdowns to win. Field goals won't get the job done. It didn't end up being that way. You got the points, so you know, you just kind of wash your hands and move on. You get the points. I wouldn't have had a problem, though, if they go for it on fourth down. But again, the fourth down with the double tush push, horrible call on the second tush push. I'm adamant about that. I don't hate going for it on fourth down, but I don't really like it in that situation. I think you can still count on your defense late in the game to get the win and give yourself a safety net.
Yeah, and you know, no safety net needed. They did. It is funny, though, that this Texans team is, like, this defense, like, they were on the field when they've lost games before. Like, that that has happened.
It's true, but it's been so lopsided from a stand. Like, the Texans weren't scoring. They were doing so many, giving so many three and outs. The defense was more tired. And that's not a defense, because if you want to be elite, you better win when it's last possession game time.
Like, the Bucs game, like, you gotta win that one.
Yeah, but if you look at that game, you're like, I get it. Mm-hmm. You're wiped.
Yeah, and they need to score 19 or 20 to beat you? Like, it was a culmination of very poor offense, and the defense just so happened to be, like, you know, catching the last end of that. But it is something where, you know, even the Titans game, the second Titans game, where Cam Ward drives him down the field, and it was a phenomenal throw, and a throw that, like, I'm not sure how many guys could make that again. I'm not sure Cam Ward could make that throw again. Right. And he eventually scores the touchdown, or they eventually score the touchdown. You get the field goal to win it. So this is a team that, like, has been leaky, or, you know, hasn't been, you know, shutting, you know, the best closer.
They haven't been
Mariano Rivera out there.
The complaint about the defense right now is that they haven't been perfect.
Yeah, they're being asked to be perfect, and they haven't done that.
And now, if the offense is trending in the right direction, which they are,
yeah,
they don't have to be perfect, but they can still be very, very good, because they're still going to be playing with some very tight margins. It's the NFL. And someone on my TikTok right now chimed in and said, why can kickers hit 70-yarders but miss extra points? And I said, well, to be fair, I think there's probably one 70-yarder attempted a year. There's probably two or three 60-plus-yard field goals attempted a year, and their success rate's going to be very small. But when you hit it, you talk about it, and you're wowed.
Yeah.
There's probably 6, 7, 8 extra points kicked per game. When you miss one, you're wowed. And it's felt, because in the NFL, you're playing with such thin margins, especially when you're battling for a division. When you're battling first, second place, those games are going to be tight. Look at these Texans games. They have not been blowout games. The win against Jacksonville, 7-point win. Win against the Titans, 3-point win. Win against the Bills, 4 points. Win against the Colts, 4 points. Like, they're all one possession games. And when you take away that extra point that the Colts missed, that's huge.
It was a huge miss.
Dude, like, that's the difference in the game right there.
Yeah, we're probably talking about an overtime game. If they kick the field goal for sure.
And you think he makes it.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
The odds are he makes it.
And the extra point that Kyme Fairbairn hit, he hit. It went inside the uprights, albeit above it. The other angle shows that it was good.
Yeah.
The broadcast didn't do the refs any favors.
No. And JJ Watt was, you know, you'd think he was a Texans homer calling it a Texans game.
I thought he was good on the call.
He was great. And he was letting the refs hear it on the basically every call on that one drive that the Texans had.
He needs to settle in a little bit. He'll get a little bit better. Yeah. He's not extremely comfortable quite yet in his delivery, JJ Watt, but I thought he was certainly fair. He was balanced. He brought some good information and insight to the broadcast. I think he's going to be good. I just think sometimes his delivery and the way he chimes in and the way he works with, I think Ian Eagle is his partner. Yeah. The way that they kind of interact, just needs to get a little bit smoother. There was something I wanted to touch on after the break, and it's with the Texans offense. There is something I just don't get. I don't understand why Nick Kayla refuses to use one of his best weapons in a particular way. I don't get it. But today's a victory Monday. Texans win their best win of the season. They're finally chasing first place in the AFC South. This is the Dell Show on ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. I'm Will Kunkel filling in. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
It's the Dell Olalea Show, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Dell Olalea.
Dell out, Will Kunkel in, off the bench, in relief, filling in for Dell as he's on vacation. Well-earned, well-deserved. D'Amico Ryan's at the podium right now, says that he does not think that safety Jalen Reed's arm is season-ending. So that injury could be just a really bad situation for the Texans. Does not think that Jalen Reed's arm injury is going to be season-ending. Well, I guess we'll find out. He also said that he was aggressive in the fourth quarter towards the end of the game on fourth down, and he would do it again. He doesn't have any regrets over it. If that's your mindset, I don't hate the aggressive mindset. I really don't. But I don't think it was the right decision, but I don't think it was like egregious.
I don't think, and I don't think it was so bad that he needs to like retract, or, you know, or reflect on it the next day and be like, oh, you know, kind of wish I had that one back. Like, to me, either way, it's a pretty close decision to make, and I can understand him going for it. It's just I personally would have kicked, and you would have too.
Yes. So Cody Stutes tweets, D'Amico Ryan said he was aggressive and thought that the failure of the fourth down Stover shove won't deter him from being aggressive, which, yeah, good. He felt the push on third down was good, and he told them to do it again. Do we have to slam our head into the brick wall repeatedly? Do we have to do that? It's the definition of insanity, for gosh sakes. Stop! It didn't work. You don't get pushed in the middle. You just... That's not what the Texans have done all year.
Yeah, and I would like to see the analytical breakdown of when a team does back-to-back tush pushes. Like, how often is the second one successful when the first one isn't?
Unless you're the Eagles.
Unless you're the... Yeah, take the Eagles out of it. They're different when it comes to this.
Yeah.
But when a team gets stuffed on the tush push and then runs it again, I feel like they never get it the second time. Whatever you could have done to get it, you would have done it the first time, not the second time you run it. So while the Stover thing, like, it's a nice wrinkle, I guess, to help with some of the short yardage things, you can't be running it back to back. You have to have a different play.
Everyone knows, and they're getting off the ball well. It's loud in there. They just proved they could stop it.
they just proved they could do it.
I don't love it. If it works, maybe we're singing a different tune. But here, so here's... I want to be intellectually honest and consistent that I love a team that will run the ball on fourth and one, third and one, second, whatever it is on the goal line repeatedly, because that's the way you're a good football team. That's the way you want to, you know, you want to impose your will. I also understand that by week 10, 11, 12, if you don't do it well, you need to not do it all the time. I understand you want to be that team. I get that. Every team wants to be that team. Not every team is that team. Not every team can be that team. So when you learn you're not the team, don't try to be a team you're not, especially with your interior linemen. That's been your biggest struggle all season long, is getting push on the interior line. You've been fine running the ball outside the tackles in the red zone. That's how you've scored most of your touchdowns. So stop trying to do it when you're not near the red zone and it's just fourth down. Just because you're not in the red zone doesn't mean that statistically you have a better chance of doing it. You still got the same players that can't create that push. That's all. Jeremy Branham tweeted.
This could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah, you know what's funny is Jeremy and I kind of agree in almost everything. And oddly enough, I think we will end up agreeing here. Having a conversation on X is like shooting yourself in the face and we're doing it again, by the way. So he says, D'Amico Ryan says they wanted to get there but didn't get there on the final drive of the first half, which is kind of what we said. Like, for the people that are saying they should have tried to score because they were getting the ball at this in the second half, you always try to double them up. Yeah, I agree. So does D'Amico. That was the goal. I said the way that they tried to achieve the goal is what kind of makes it scary, because it was dog poo. I don't think they did it well. And Jeremy said, I mean, they probably get points if Higgins has any situational awareness, which we mentioned exactly. You got to get up the field. But I also said it shouldn't have been third and 10 on that. And he said they threw the ball on first and second down. Was it a bad plan or bad execution? I think going deep to Nico Collins was the bad idea. Just start moving the ball, run the ball, chop away yards at a time. Like, you still can run the ball. You have plenty of time, and you had a timeout. Anyway, I'm not reading our entire conversation, Jeremy, on X, so that you can get attention, okay?
Yeah, you will have your time later in the day.
Go away. Golly, social media. Okay, this is what I touched on before the break. The Texans' offense is looking better, and I think we're starting to now get into territory where we're going to notice not having Joe Mixon. Early on in the season, we noticed not having Joe Mixon in the sense of Darion Gumba-Wale fumbling the ball. I don't think the offense was good enough to where Joe was going to make a massive difference. I do think that maybe you win a game out of those first three if you have Joe. They were tightly contested games. The glaring fumble by Dare. Joe doesn't fumble that, probably. But my point is, the offense isn't all of a sudden scoring 25, 30 points in those games with Joe. Like, the issues were more foundational with Nick Caley, the game plan in the offensive line, the lack of protection, the lack of push. There were 100 reasons that the offense was bad to start the season, and Joe in the running back situation was none of them. But I do think we're starting to get to that point that the better the offense gets, you start to feel the margins a little bit more. And that's where we're going because the offense is getting better. And this is not a knock on Woody Marks at all, by the way. He's just not Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is a very good NFL running back, and I think he had a little bit more left in the tank. I think Woody Marks probably has a higher ceiling going forward. He's a lot younger, but he's also a really good receiving running back. I'm trying to find his college stats now. Of course, that ruined my momentum. Dumbass. I should have pulled this up in the break. Instead of being on TikTok, talking to people on there, my dumbass is...
I mean, I do know that was like part of his game at USC. Yeah, so, obviously at USC, if you're a running back, you're going to have to catch the passes in the Lincoln Riley.
Or at Mississippi State, for that matter, where he played 4 years. So in his career in college, he had 261 catches, 1,500 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Per game, he averaged 27 yards receiving per game. His best year receiving was his second year at Mississippi State, 83 catches, 500 yards, 6 yards per reception, 38 yards a game, 3 touchdowns. This season, he has 18 catches for 188 yards. Am I missing something here? Why are we not throwing the ball intentionally to Woody Marks? Not dump offs, not like escape routes, not emergency, get rid of the ball. You know, try to make something out of it. Like, why are we not designing more plays for Woody Marks?
Yeah, I feel like there could be a one screen pass minimum to Woody Marks per game, like one running back screen just to get things moving.
A wheel route.
Yeah, get him matched up against a linebacker.
Angle route through the middle, off like something. Give him, he's a good receiving.
Yeah,
running back. He is.
And you're a team that has so few weapons that you can like hang your hat on of like. Just get this guy the ball and watch what happens. Like, it really is Nico Collins, and that's kind of it. So, yeah, I mean, you need an easy button. That feels like a pretty easy button to press, is the Woody Marks quick pass game.
So, Woody Marks has 18 catches on 27 targets this year. Nick Chubb has 12 catches on 19 targets this year. This is a dude who receiving in his career has a season high of 27 catches in an entire season.
And he was like a bell cow back. Like, he was an every down back.
He was over 1,000 yards 4 years straight before the injuries hit.
Yeah.
So, like, he was a stud running back. Like, Nick Chubb was elite, but not a receiving running back.
No, never a guy out of the backfield.
Why is he on par with Woody Marks in regards to catching the ball? But to be fair, like, if Nick Chubb has the ability to catch the ball, throw him the ball just because he hasn't done it in his career. Now, my point is, a guy that hasn't done it in his career is on par with a guy that can do it in his career that should have more. Like, the numbers need to be higher for Woody, not lower for Nick.
And it feels like the workload is moving in Woody Marks' favor, which is
but not the catching. Yes,
yeah, just total the yes, total the total touches, workload, for sure. Total touches is moving in Woody's favor. And you would think that the first thing that happens when Woody Marks is on the field instead of Chubb more is that you're throwing the ball. But they're still treating him like, you know, like they're interchangeable almost. Well, and
Nick came in
because
Woody got hurt. Woody left. I think he even went to the locker room at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yesterday in the first quarter, Woody
Marks.
Yeah.
So I think this is the third straight game, by the way, that there's been an injury scare with Woody Marks.
Certainly
the second.
Yeah.
I think the third. And We always say escaped. I mean, if you're not hurt, you're not hurt. I don't know that you escape injury. I mean, you either get hurt or you don't get hurt.
Yeah, I think he just got, like, re-taped up. Like, he just got his ankle re-taped, right?
To your point about touches, though, game one of the season, 3 touches for 3 yards. The Buccaneers game, 3 carries, 14 yards.
Okay.
You think... Do you win? You win one of these games, right? If Woody
5 yards
Marks
per
is
carry.
More part of the game plan, now maybe I always am skeptical of my criticism of playing time because I don't know what they know of the playbook, and the coaches know that they know what they're ready for,
especially for a rookie.
Exactly,
100%. Rookie in September,
and then the Jaguars game, 6 carries, 27 yards, and then all of a sudden the Titans game, 17 carries, 69 yards. Like, oh hell yeah! But then against the Ravens. which I'm not going to nitpick the Ravens because they put up 44 points against that crap defense. 7 carries, 24 yards, so back down to single digits. And then, ever since that Ravens game, coming out of the bye week into week 7, he's had double-digit carries, 10, 11, 10, 14, 18, 16, 19 against the Colts. So he's now running back 1, as it should be. I just don't think they're tapping into all the potential. It's like if you have an oil well, as we sit here in Texas, and you drill down to 10 feet, and you're getting a little dribble, like, okay, you think maybe we can go down to 3,000 for gosh sakes and see what the hell's really down there, see if we can become a millionaire, see if we can strike gold?
Yeah.
Like, why are we not tapping into the real potential of what Woody Marks is? And this isn't like, hey, let's see if he can catch the ball. Let's see if he can be a good wide receiver out of the backfield. He's done it. He did it to the tune of 1,500 yards in 5 years in college, 261 catches. He went over 500 yards his second year at Mississippi State. His final year at USC last year, he had 47 catches, 321 yards, 27 yards per game. I'm just saying. That, again, goes to my criticism. My biggest criticism of this season is the coaching staff not putting the offensive guys in position to have success, not utilizing their talents the most, which, ironically, during OTAs and minicamp was the biggest praise from all the players about Nick Caley, is that he, not Bobby Slowick, he, Nick Caley, was going to put them in position to have success. Some guys, yeah, for sure. Dalton Schultz, we're seeing the most, which credit to him to play through all these injuries. All right, we're going to talk about the Rockets coming out of the break because we need to talk about our NBA team. They had an unbelievable month of November. Still was not the best team in the NBA, but are the Rockets the best team in the NBA? Will Kunkel filling in for Dell here on ESPN Radio. Find me on YouTube, Kicking with Kunkel's my show. Chime in on the show, text or call 713-780-3776. I'll be with you for another 20 minutes before we go national. We'll be right back.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Dell Olalea Show.
Will Kunkel filling in for Dell as he is out nude sunbathing. Weird weather to do it in. Shout out to you, Dell. Enjoy it, my brother. Find me on YouTube. Kicking with Kunkel is my show. We got about 20 minutes left here. We've talked a whole lot about your Houston Texans, and rightfully so. They played probably their best game of the season because of the competition, because it was on the road, because of what was on the line. I know they looked better against the Ravens offensively, but, like, let's be honest, that wasn't the Ravens. It wasn't really even an NFL team. It was the G League, if you will. This was their best game of the year, I think. Offensively, defensively, they held the Colts to 16 points. It's the first time the Colts have been held below 20 points all season long. So, great victory Monday for the Texans. They take on the Chiefs Sunday Night Football next week. But I would be remiss if we did not talk about your Houston Rockets. Are they not the best team in the NBA? Probably not, but not because they're not good. They just went 11-2 in the month of November. Their two losses coming to San Antonio on the road and Denver here at home. They just waxed Utah 129-101, who they play again tonight at 8 o'clock in Utah before they're finally back home on Wednesday against the Kings, and then again Friday at home against Phoenix. I believe they have 4 games in 5 days. Crazy stretch right now. But if you look at the NBA standings, those defending champs, man, are they good. The Pistons, good as well. 16-4 on the year. The Rockets, 13-4. The Oklahoma City Thunder, 20-1.
Pretty good.
20-1. And it's an interesting conversation with the Thunder because last year when they won the title, everyone said, yeah, they're champions. But I don't know that they are historically a good basketball team. There's certain teams you see when they have big names, you say, oh, hell yeah, one of the best teams we've seen. That was an honor to watch. But we didn't do that with the Thunder because they probably play in Oklahoma City Thunder and they play in Oklahoma City as the Thunder. And because they don't have that massive star power, but if you're an NBA fan, you sure as hell know those names, and you know they're a damn good team. And so, interestingly, I wonder if they heard some of that slight. Not that they're playing with a chip on their shoulder significantly as if they need that and they're not good. But they're, it's almost like they're playing on a prove-it revenge tour. Like, no, like last year wasn't a fluke. We are this good.
I mean, what it reminds me of is the second Warriors year, where yes, they win the title the first year, then they go 73-9. Mm-hmm. That's what this, I mean, you start 20-1, like you immediately get in 70 win talks of this is a team that can do it. And yeah, I mean, they haven't had Jalen Williams until the last two games. So like they're doing this shorthanded too. They're running through the league like this. Yeah, the OKC, I think you're right. I think this is like a statement kind
of. Like an FU. Yeah. We just accomplished the NBA title against a team that y'all thought was no good in the Pacers, who ended up being really good. Tyrese Halliburton is an absolute superstar. Just because they play in Indianapolis, why is it that in the NBA, it's this small market narrative is such a thing, but in the NFL, it's not? Why is that? Yeah. Why is it the Pacers are small market, but not the Colts? I'm pretty sure they play in this. They play across the street from each other.
Yeah, they're in the same complex.
Yeah. Why are the Colts viewed as a small, as a regular-ass NFL powerhouse, best offense in the NFL team? Meanwhile, the Pacers last year were viewed as, what a great story. A small market team can have success.
Yeah, and like the Kansas City Chiefs are like the definitive you know, team of the 2020s. And if the NBA tomorrow said that they're making a team in Kansas City, people would be like, what the hell are they doing?
Kansas City?
Like, are you kidding
me? You think they can have any success in that small little town in Missouri?
No,
coast to people. Oh, my gosh.
It's crazy. It is crazy the way that NBA, I don't know, discourse gets shaped. Where it's like,
and I think I know why. Now, obviously, just for everyone that's thinking MLB, like that's different because of the salary cap. So that's small market team is actually real. And it's not even small market necessarily. It's
unwillingness.
Small payroll. Yeah. It's just you don't spend your money. Yeah. Like Pittsburgh's not a small market. It's a dog fertilizer franchise because you don't spend anything.
That's another one where it's like, well, they play in the same city as the Steelers.
Yeah.
Like one of the like
and the Penguins.
A-plus brands. Yeah, and the Penguins. The A-plus brands of their sport.
100%. That's so wild to me that the NFL has been able to not overcome, but not even allow the small market conversation to ever. Green Bay!
Yeah. Yeah.
Bro, Green Bay is a town. It's damn near a village.
Yeah. It's smaller than some of these college towns.
And they have maybe the best fan base in the NFL. They certainly have the friendliest and the most fun game atmosphere in the NFL, inside and outside of that stadium. It's my favorite place in the world to go see a football game. They're the best fans. They welcome you. The parties are awesome. They give you brats. They give you beer. You wearing the opposing team's colors is the best thing you can possibly do in Green Bay, because they will go out of their way to welcome you to their tailgate to have fun and invite you into their home. I promise you. Do that in another town. See what happens. Like, it's not fun. It's not a badge of honor for you towns that think that's cool. It's not. It makes it such a crappy experience. Yeah. But anyway.
Rockets. What a season.
Holy smokes. Are we going to look back? There's a lot of basketball to be played this season. And I do not think the Thunder are going to regress naturally. Now, if an injury happens, that'd be sad for them. That'd be unfortunate. Yeah. But boy. Between the Thunder, the Lakers are playing good. I'm holding my breath on the Lakers because who knows what's going to happen with LeBron and Luka going forward in their injury situation. But are we going to look back and be like, man, of course the Rockets get KD this year. Of course the Rockets are good and the Thunder are just crazy good.
Yeah, it's the year that the Thunder like take the leap into, you know, with how they're playing right now, they will be a all-time team, you know, like how they weren't remembered last year as one of the great teams. If they finish this off, they will be remembered as one of the great teams. So, yeah, I, to me, it is a big, like, the Rockets were the team that was going toe-to-toe with the Warriors at the peak of the Warriors, and they have to rebuild. Just the competitive cycle had run its course. And then by the time they're good again, it's like, oh, another one of these teams is ready to go. Never mind that dude in San Antonio who, you know, the second they put a good team around him is going to be a pain for years to come. So, yeah, there is a little bit of like, man, They can't sneak a title in. But they can't sneak fair, a being the best team of the league in.
I don't care what sport you play at the highest level. You're never going to be given a championship. Yeah. Nothing's ever going to come easy. You're going to have to beat somebody good in order to win it all. This Western Conference, though, is shaping up to be a really fun Western Conference.
Do they have to be this good? That's my question.
Do they have to be this good? Do you have to be that? It's like...
Okay, they'll be good.
All right, if you're Reggie Miller and you're Karl Malone and you're John Stockton, you're like, oh, hell yeah, I'm a Hall of Fame player. We got really good teams. Wait, who? Number 23? Every year I got to see that dude? Yeah.
Thank God he left. Oh, he's back?
Yeah. Like, Pacers... And then the Knicks had some really good teams. They couldn't get past the Bulls. The Bulls were just that team with Mike that was like, damn, I got to play in this era out of my whole life, all of eternity.
There's you've named most of the guys where it's like they don't get introduced as NBA champion so-and-so. You know, because NBA champion Charles Barkley. Yeah, that one guy did that.
Isn't that crazy, man?
Yeah.
That's kind of how the NBA goes, but. Rockets having an unbelievable year. They're averaging 122 points a game. It's second best, 121.6 technically, second best to the Thunder at 122.2. So not even a full point behind them. I mean,
that to me is one of the biggest parts of their seasons. We thought they would be improved on offense.
Yeah, they didn't think they'd be this good. You know, of course, we look at the Kevin Durant ad, but Reed Shepard ad. That was a free agent pickup for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, and Amin Thompson, but really
expanding his game.
Shingun taking the leap. Like they got an all NBA player with Alperen Şengün.
To Rafael Stone's credit, when we talked to him at the end of the season, he said, you know, there might be some changes, but you know, we're keeping our guys. You know, there were too many guys to keep all of them. We obviously saw that they ended up getting rid of Jalen Green, which I think they had to do. Jalen was not the guy to be the guy. What he did against the Warriors was embarrassing. It just, dude, go out there and miss every shot, but take 30 of them.
Yeah.
Don't take six of them and completely disappear. Have a bad game, fine. Don't have six bad games. Don't disappear for six games. Go out there and lay it on the line. Let it hang out, but fail, fine. I don't have a problem with the failure aspect. I have a problem with not being bold and aggressive as the guy that you needed to be. So they go out and get Kevin Durant. And then all their young guys that they said they were going to keep and Rafael Stone wants to build around have gotten better. Alperen Şengün gets better. Jabari Smith Jr. improved dramatically. Amen Thompson getting better on the offensive side of the ball. And they lost Fred VanVleet. Reed Shepard, it took a little bit of time to get going. Because he didn't have a whole lot of minutes, so I think it was really fair. First of all, he's never going to replace Fred. Very different players. A significantly better scorer offensively than Fred, but not the leader, point guard, general that Fred was. He certainly doesn't have the championship pedigree that Fred does. Losing Fred, I hope it doesn't come back and really rear its ugly head, but we're not going to know that for the regular season.
Yeah.
The Rockets are going to be fine during the regular season. They're going to score a whole bunch of points. They changed their entire identity with a couple moves. They get rid of Jalen, who was a good scorer in the regular season. Now they have a dog and a primetime playoff scorer who can also obviously do it in the regular season, and Kevin Durant. But they also get rid of Dylan Brooks. So getting rid of Dylan Brooks, that changes the identity of their team and the way they play. So they're now more of an offensive team. And I asked Ime Udoka, I think 2 weeks ago, you know, you've built your identity and you've built this team on defense. How do you not lose that mindset when you're scoring? Because in the NBA, man, when you're scoring, like all you want to do is score. All you want to do is run and play that D'Antoni style offense and play no damn defense. But under Ime, you can't get away with that. You want to be a team that does both. And when you reach teams like the Lakers and the Thunder, you're going to want to play some damn defense. And they do play defense. And so credit to him to having done that. They're allowing 110 points a game. That's 5 points. 5 points better than the Lakers and 3 points worse than the Thunder. So the Thunder do it all. They're certainly the best team in the NBA. I don't think there's any negotiating about that. That's at least on the West, in the West. The East is a little bit weaker. But yeah, man, I think that they are a very well-rounded team. They can play defense. They're a better offensive team that they have been in the past, and they haven't, you know, abandoned that defense. So Shout out to the Rockets and what they're doing. They're on the road tonight in Utah for another game, a back-to-back. They won last night in convincing fashion. I wonder what the spread is tonight, because that's tough going back-to-back. They won by 20-some-odd last night. They're 12.5-point favorite. They won by 28 last night. They're 12.5-point favorites tonight. Not saying they won't cover, but back-to-back nights, same team on the road, not easy. It's like trying to win a doubleheader in baseball.
I wonder if Durant will play. Probably not, right?
I hope not. You know, I hate maintenance. Load management. Yeah. I hate it. I think it's stupid. If you can play, play. At the same time, when you have an older gentleman chasing a championship, you really do want to set yourself up for success as much as you can down the stretch. And I don't know that December 1st on the second game against the Jazz is where you want to risk anything. And then they come home on Wednesday and Friday against the Kings, and Jalen Green makes his triumphant return to the Suns. Tribute video?
Maybe. Maybe.
Well, for sure that.
The bar's low.
I definitely agree, maybe.
The bar's low for tribute video.
Sean Mapes, everybody.
Yeah, I think he maybe gets one.
Well,
but I could also see him not
go out on a limb.
Will,
Sean.
I can see him getting one. I could see him not getting. No, I think he'll get.
God, dude.
I'm trying to picture like what they would.
What would be on? So that's good.
That's what
I'm doing right now. What's on the video?
Because it would just be cool highlights.
Yeah.
There's not like a definitive game. What, two of the first round of the playoffs?
Here's
this
my
year?
Prediction. You ready? Yeah, they're gonna show only shots from game two. And then they're going to show him just chilling.
And then
game
in the,
one, three, yeah. five, six, and seven.
And then in the post game, which was a funny quote in the moment, and then immediately aged poorly, where he goes, "Yeah, in game one, I think the lights were just a little too bright for
they
me."
Play that audio.
And then he just follows it up with stinker after stinker after saying that.
The worst part was I loved him saying that because I thought it was
honest.
It was open. It was honest. It was vulnerable. And then he followed it up with 20-some-odd points and was like, hell yeah, now I'm here. But then he was like, oh, my God, it's game three, game four, game five, game six, game seven. He crumbled. He wilted.
Yeah.
Here's my prediction. No tribute video, but a moment to honor his return.
Showed on the jump.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all. We going to break?
No, we're good. We're done.
That's it for the show?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Lane Kiffin. We'll talk to you, or we'll talk about you.
Oh, tomorrow. Man. I've got a Lane Kiffin take on my channel on YouTube, Kicking It With Kunkel. College football is a mess. It is an absolute joke. It is embarrassing. Lane Kiffin doesn't have a whole bunch of integrity, but it sure as hell ain't his fault, the position that he was put in. Filling in for Dell, this is Will Kunkel. Dell, thanks, man. I'll be back with you guys tomorrow, 10 to noon. Again, give me the sub on YouTube. We'll be back tomorrow, 10 to noon. Victory Monday. See you, Houston.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.